This is the story of the Ewok adventure.
And from Wham! To Ewoks, on Sunday, November 25th, ABC will air George Lucas's first ever TV project, a TV movie called The Ewok Adventure, which features those furry little creatures from Return of the Jedi. Entertainment Tonight has learned that it can be heard in stereo. This will be the first time any of the commercial networks has attempted a nationwide primetime stereo simulcast.
You think this new Ewok movie, the title Ewok Holiday Movie, will stand?
Well, I think we're making a very good movie. We have very good actors, and I think there's nothing like it on television. See, this will be a two-hour movie of the week, and most of those stories are not like this at all. They almost never have costumes. They're usually about families that are, you know, contemporary life stories or marriage stories or something like that, crime stories. But they never have this kind of look to it.
Do you think this will be a big blockbuster like The Day After or V or something?
Well, I hope so.
Publicized like that.
We'll see.
Tonight.
Come on!
From the creators of the Star Wars saga. The bold adventure of courage and daring. Where heroes become legends. And the only thing you can be sure of is magic. Lucasfilm presents The Ewok Adventure next.
Yeah, that's it. Don't you have a Star Cruiser?
Somewhere in space, this may all be happening right now.
Welcome to Star Wars at the Movies.
Star Wars.
Star Wars.
Star Wars.
At the Movies.
An international oral history of cinematic experiences from a galaxy far, far away.
I've seen Star Wars about a dozen times.
I've seen Star Wars
17 times.
Star Wars, 22 times.
40 times and it was great each time.
55.
About 57 times.
69 fois.
You can never get too much of Star Wars. I've seen the first Star Wars 153 times.
All together, we have seen Star Wars 324 times.
We've been here for 6 days and it's great!
Hello there, or should I say, goopa. I'm Stephen Danley, and episode 25 of Star Wars at the Movies is going to take us deep into an enchanted forest on the distant moon of Endor. Yes, it's finally time to celebrate 40 years of Caravan of Courage, or as it was first known to North American television audiences, The Ewok Adventure. Along with its 1985 sequel, which I'll definitely be giving the spotlight next year, Caravan of Courage represents another bizarre, experimental byproduct in the history of Star Wars and Lucasfilm that, if you happened upon it in modern times without any context, you might be perplexed at best and deeply unsettled at worst. But if you came to it at just the right time and age, it remains beloved. And that was certainly the case for me. Having been obsessed with Return of the Jedi and Ewok life and culture from the earliest moments in my archive memory, the Ewok movies were like Dream Factory content that magically materialized for me when I was starving for more. And that's thanks to my video tech-savvy hero of a mom, who you heard from last episode. In the very early 1990s, she made the costly yet invaluable investment of a Disney Channel subscription for our family, and she somehow taped commercial-free broadcasts of both Caravan of Courage and Battle for Endor for us.
From the creator of Star Wars comes an adventure for the entire family.
I think they want to be our friends.
Hey,
miss the exclusive Disney Channel premiere, The Ewok Adventure, tonight.
I was probably 5 or 6 years old when I first laid eyes on them, and the rest is history. There was a 3 to 4 year period that followed where I watched them just as, if not more often, than the original trilogy, and considered them simply as other Star Wars movies. Though their magic faded with time, and honestly probably losing track of the VHS tapes during a move, they lay dormant in my subconscious until that miraculous DVD release in the mid-2000s when I was in college, where the novelty and the nostalgia made a brief resurgence. As someone who made a lot of backyard movies growing up, my appreciation for the Ewok movies has steadily grown as I've gotten older, one of which was even directly inspired by them. My then 3 or 4 year old kid sister played Sindel, and I played a blanket-draped Ewok hero named Swinga, taking on the Empire with a single, kank-like stick and escaping in a Ford Aerostar-turned Star Cruiser. If any of that sounds like your vibe and you're brave enough to watch, I'll include a link to it in the show notes. Anyway, looking back and coming to learn that Caravan of Courage was literally a backyard movie for Lucasfilm and Industrial Light and Magic really solidified its place in my heart. Producer and former ILM general manager Tom Smith was interviewed for the summer 1984 issue of Bantha Tracks when the project was simply known as the Ewok movie, and shed light on just how quickly the whole thing came together. Pre-production had started that April, and they were already shooting it locally in June, with a planned broadcast date between Thanksgiving and Christmas. Accomplishing that was the result of an immensely talented and creative team who knew what they were doing and were empowered to get it done with some of the oldest tricks in the book. Production designer and resident Ewok expert Joe Johnston once said that George Lucas told the crew to just, quote, go out and have some fun. And the end result shows. It's carefree, whimsical, weird, and not at all lacking in charm. Whether it received Lucasfilm's projected audience of over 50 million viewers on broadcast night, I don't know. But its Emmy nomination for Outstanding Children's Programming and win for Outstanding Visual Effects speaks to its recognition at the time. And now, to give it some recognition in the year of our bizarro low-gray 2024, with a commemorative caravan of interviews and anecdotes from Seattle to Geneva. First up is a chat with Jason Gibner from Blast Points. All right, so Jason, how did you first become aware that an Ewok movie was coming to television?
Well, it makes me feel really old because I watched it much like Gabe when it first aired on ABC. How did I find out about it? I don't really remember. I might have seen a commercial for it on TV or something. I might have read about it in Starlog. I might have seen ads in like my grandma's TV guide at her house or something. But I knew enough about it that it was playing in stereo, which I think, you know, I think I learned about that by watching like Entertainment Tonight or something in the 80s, because somehow I knew that it was being played in stereo on the radio.
So you had to tune into your whatever local station was picking it up.
Yes, and I watched it with headphones on. I like had like a little like boombox or something because I was 8 years old. Yeah, right. Yeah, 8 years old. So I had like a boombox. It was a silver boombox, and I had my headphones plugged into it. And I was watching the Ewok Adventure in my room because I had like a little itty bitty TV in my room as a little kid.
Yes,
with the radio.
Oh, that's amazing. What were your initial impressions of the movie itself? Like, what immediately stood out to you? Were you an Ewok kid already going in? Were you geared up for that?
Yeah, Gabe has my co-host on Blast Points. Gabe, he's a really wise philosophy on us as Star Wars fans with our age, that we are Return of the Jedi people, where we were very, very Star Wars was the first movie, Star Wars movie we saw, but we were so young and it made such a huge impression. And Empire being the movie that it is, we were still very young for Empire. We loved it, but we were still very, very young. But by the time Return of the Jedi came out, we were, you know, 7 years old, we were the age for Return of the Jedi. And so, yeah, I was definitely an Ewok person. And I was just like, this is a new Star Wars movie thing. It's on TV. This is great.
And what, in terms of the movie itself, were there standout aspects about it? Was it the story? Was it just the, what was the thing that from 40 years ago that you remember immediately making an impact?
Well, it's funny because I feel like I didn't see it for decades. And it would kind of like, for a lot of people, it just kind of was like, remember there were these movies with the Ewoks on TV with that girl with the curly hair, and people be like, oh yeah, what's up with that? And then I was somewhere and I found a VHS of both the movies, and I was like, oh my god, these are the movies with the Ewok movies with the girl with the curly hair. And I put them in, and it was like all the memories came back to me of what I thought was cool about it when I was a little kid. I remember the spaceship that the Tawani family crashes down in. I remember the Gorax at the end, the Gorax being really cool. I remember also thinking things like Low Gray looked weird and things like that. And like watching it again, I think I was in my 20s when I got the when I found the VHS somewhere. I was kind of like, wow, these movies are weird as hell. But I have really cozy memories of being just hyped beyond belief for them.
So, you know, now it's funny. It literally 40 years to the night, you probably had just finished watching it at this point.
Right.
How do you look at Caravan of Courage today within the broader context of like Star Wars and the Lucasfilm tapestry?
You know, it's fascinating because it predates Young Indiana Jones as George Lucas's first experiment with television. And can I do something like Star Wars, but not shoot it in the UK, not spend all this money, not be away from my family for so long? Can we do something Star Wars-y, but literally in the backyard at Skywalker Ranch? Can we do it on the cheap? Is basically it. And that's what it kind of represents. Like, yeah, we can do this. We can do it. It doesn't have to be Return of the Jedi, this giant production that almost kills everyone involved in it. And then you kind of see that philosophy still going and went through. I wonder what the line from the Ewok adventure movies, the Ewok movies to Young Indy was. And I think that's really interesting. And then, as we know, Young Indy 2, the prequels. It's all there.
All the building blocks, yeah.
Right.
If you had the chance to see these movies theatrically, how far would you travel to be able to do that?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, if you're in California, I'm in Michigan. I'm pretty far away. If I heard those, like, you know, the New Beverly in Los Angeles has Quentin Tarantino, that maniac has a 35 millimeter UK print of both Ewok movies, I would be like, you bastards. I would look at flights. I'd be like, ah, it would kill me. And I would think about it. How far would I get? I don't know.
Thanks again for doing this, and for all you guys do. I mean, I love Blast Points. It's just it's a go-to for me. So,
well, thank you. Yeah, it was so cool to meet you last year in Los Angeles.
And
I really appreciate that. It's really nice of you. Yeah, and we've got a Patreon episode coming out this week sometime where we watch the commercials from Caravan of Courage. And we did a commentary for just the commercials. So
incredible.
It's like, what else is there to do? You know? So that's what we did. So, yeah.
Lucasfilm's The Ewok Adventure. Brought to you by Huggies, the diapers that help stop leaking.
P.S. If you're a fellow member of the Blast Points Army, the commercial breaks commentary that Jason mentioned is a required audiovisual experience and a total riot. Okay, let's keep this caravan moving.
Kundala!
This is Dave Brott calling in from Cincinnati, Ohio with my Ewok adventure memories. This is just for the first movie, but I remember hearing about it, I think, through TV Guide. I believe I was just flipping through that, as I always did, and saw an ad for it, and boy, did that blow my mind. I'm not sure this is the first place that I heard tell of it, but I do remember talking to kids at school about it. I remember there was another kid on our street that my sister and I watched it with. But as far as I was concerned, this was a new Star Wars movie. I was very into the Ewoks back in the day. Still am now. And very exciting to see the Ewoks on television. It blew my young mind, quite frankly. I remember the bumpers for the movie. Those were particularly exciting, where it would say, you know, the Ewok adventure will continue after this. And there was a picture of the Wisties on one of them, I remember, flying around, which was exciting because that hadn't yet happened in the movie. So it was like a little preview, like a mini preview for something that was going to happen in 15 minutes later in the movie. I miss bumpers like that. Those were fun. Yeah, my memories are very, very, very positive. My sister recorded it in our Betamax, I believe, so we were able to watch it all the time. I think that might have been the first Star Wars movie I had that ability with, that we actually owned a copy. So that was very exciting. Very excited about all the Ewok adventure things these days that we're seeing more and more of, action figures, shows, etc. Hoping for more. Enjoy the podcast. Thanks a lot, Steve.
The Ewok adventure will continue in a moment.
Next, following the Ewok adventure, Mark and the Judge save a girl from an army of renegade cops.
Jumper, I'll blow your stinking head off!
1984, you guys in the States got Caravan of Courage, as we call it, Ewok Adventure, I believe, as you call it, on UK cinema screens. And coming hot on the heels as it was from Return of the Jedi, Jedi's not on video at this point, not for another couple of years. And a lot of fans of the time have kind of stepped over to taking interest in things like Star Trek, because ILM were working on, for example, Star Trek 3, The Search for Spock, Temple of Doom's come out. It's a fertile time for ILM, and so anybody who's got an interest in Star Wars, who's still interested in Star Wars, of course, are going to be paying attention to things like that, and actors that we love and follow. So Harrison turns up in Witness, I think, in 85, and the rest of the cast are all doing other things. But then we start hearing, and mostly it was via Bantha Tracks, that there's going to be a TV movie called Caravan of Courage, as we call it in Europe, and that it would hit UK cinema screens. And so when this arrives, it was a surprise. It's definitely a TV movie. It's not on the scale of Jedi. There's barely any visual effects in it by comparison to what we'd just seen. And let's not forget, Jedi really was, I think as Dennis Muren said in the collector's edition, it was ILM's magnum opus. It was their big finale for optical. On a grand scale, they would still do more optical stuff, but nothing to the scale of Jedi before the switch over to digital. So to be given something that still isn't fully defined when it's set, is it after Jedi? Is it before Jedi? It's a bit sketchy and a bit spotty, but it doesn't matter. It's a kid's film, and it's a sweet film. And while we never got any action figures related to it, in fact, there was very, very, very little merchandise. I think if I go through my collection, I think I've got a Japanese program for Caravan of Courage. I've certainly got a press pack, a UK and a US one. There was the badge that came with Bantha Tracks, of course, as part of the membership kit. So there's the Ewok badge or the Wicket badge with that, but very little outside of that. But of course, you had the animated Ewoks sort of running at the similar time as well, and there was plenty of merchandise surrounding that. So looking back at Caravan of Courage now, and the whole Ewok TV adventures, it's quite an interesting time, certainly for Star Wars fans to cast their minds back to. It was never going to win any Oscars, but it certainly, as I understand, won some Emmys. I think it had the highest rated TV movie of the year in terms of audiences. So it was certainly well regarded, and like many things are these days, things are reappraised, things are looked back with different lenses. We might look back at Caravan of Courage with slightly rose-tinted glasses, but nevertheless, it was an interesting, it was different, it was something that gave us our fix of Star Wars. And I wish, looking back, that Lucasfilm had done more. They would, not that many years later, turn to Indiana Jones for TV, but we never did return to Star Wars on the television until the Disney Plus days. So that's my memories of Caravan of Courage at 40. Can't believe it's been 40 years.
You met them first in Return of the Jedi. Now the Ewoks are back in the fantastic new adventure movie, Caravan of Courage. Lucasfilm and 20th Century Fox invite you to join the enchanting tribe of Ewoks and Mace and Sindel Tawani on a journey of discovery across the distant moon of Endor. Join them all on their desperate search for the missing Tawanis in the face of unbelievable terror. Discover the mystery and excitement of this brave new world among the stars and come deeper into the terrors of the universe than you have ever dared before. Join us on an adventure to remember.
Speaking of merchandise, I was so happy to bring in my friend and Ewok collectible professional, Amy Schoberg, to guide us on an international tour of Caravan of Courage treasures. Be sure to check out the show notes for visuals on this one.
On their way home, the inquisitive Ewoks decide to investigate the strange object Deej spotted from the sky.
Okay, so Amy, what's your earliest memory of the Ewok adventure? Do you have any recollections of watching the original broadcast, or was it something you discovered later?
I knew it existed. I remember it was probably one of those things we watched, like, you know, Saturday evening movie kind of thing with the family or whatever. But it wasn't until it came out on DVD that I really hunkered down and started watching it and gave it any real second thought or interest. I had to look it up. I had to look up the date because I actually have my copy. 2004. So, yeah.
I remember those. I think that was when I revisited it. I'd seen it on the Disney Channel as a kid and I think had a recording on VHS. And then it wasn't until that DVD that I really saw it again. So how did you become a collector of all things Ewoks? What was the item that started it all? What do you remember, if there was a single item that started it all?
You remember the Action, I think it was Action Fleet, the Micro Machine line in the 90s. I had some friends that were deep into Star Wars, and one of them had a double of one of the Ewoks, and she's like, here, you can have this. And I'm like, oh, cool, you know? And that was my first Star Wars thing for myself. My brother was always the Star Wars collector. He had all the Ewoks, he had the Ewok Village, he had all, you know, everything. And I was always very envious of that. At that point, I think I was like 13. I was like, an Ewok of my own. That's cool. And then it kind of sprouted from there. And then I always collected whatever I liked. But at a certain point, I looked back and went, oh, this is all like Ewoks and Jedi stuff, because that's my favorite movie.
Yeah.
So it's like, I might as well own it. Just, you know, focus on the Ewoks.
Yeah. And well, so the thing is, like you, I know you know this, there's immense volume of Ewok related merchandise, but there isn't nearly as much that's tied specifically to the TV movies by comparison, it seems. You know, why do you think that is?
Well, it was an odd time for Lucasfilm, right? They had year after year for quite a few years, they were trying new things. They were trying to connect to a new audience or keep the interest going in Star Wars, despite the fact there were no new movies coming out. So, hey, we're gonna try this droids cartoon. We're gonna do the Ewoks cartoons. Ewoks cartoons outlasted droids by a year. And then we're gonna do these Ewok movies and, you know, see what else is going on. And with each year that went on, there was declining interest, I think. And so there was less of an emphasis and a push to put out merchandise. Certainly not having any toy lines didn't really help much there. But when you're showing something one night on a national broadcast, you're not anticipating it. They're not going to play it over and over again. It's not in the theater. So the push for merch isn't as strong.
Yeah, that makes sense. So what I thought we could do is just highlight a handful of the merch that's tied specifically to Caravan of Courage. To start off, maybe we could look at some of the behind the scenes stuff. All right. So the first thing we have is one of my favorite crew items of all time. It's this this T-shirt that has a crazy savage Ewok scene going on here. and one of them is screaming, "Damn right, we're cute." So what's the story on this? And do you have one of these?
I do not. This is a photo from Gus Lopez's collection, but I like the part of me just likes it because it looks like something that you'd hire someone at the local state fair to make with an airbrush gun, you know? I think the crew that was working at ILM were just kind of like, murder bears, you know? We're making a movie about murder bears. So there was a little bit of tongue-in-cheek play on this one, I think.
And I imagine these are pretty tough to track down.
They don't come up very often. I think there was a Eric Walker who played Mace was doing a Kickstarter at some point, and I think he was doing this artwork on a shirt for a time, and you could get it kind of like as a new print. I didn't get in on that either. I kind of feel bad about it, but
yeah. And then up next, this is another one. I knew this was from Gus's collection, but it's the stop motion maquette puppet of the Gorax. Now, have you seen this in person before?
Yes. Yeah. That's the picture I took when Gus was very nice and let me come and take pictures of all his Ewok merchandise and Ewok items for a panel that we did with Jared Clark and I for Celebration. Yeah. It's very tiny. You know, it's probably only like 8 or 9 inches tall. It's a very small puppet.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. And this is from basically when he falls down the crevice, right? I think is that the only time it was used?
Yeah. I'm not sure, but I probably, yeah.
It's like a face that anyone could love.
Yeah.
I thought we'd maybe go into a little bit of the kind of ephemeral promotional stuff out there. And with it being on TV here in North America, I'm assuming this was one of several kind of TV related magazines. This one is TV View, right? With Deej on the cover.
Yeah, this is from Jared Clark's collection. But yeah, if you're looking to collect stateside for stuff, I'd say the TV Guide, the regional TV guides, newspapers, magazines, there's whole magazine ads that you can get for it. The images change, but Lucasfilm did send out stock photos for the press to use. So it's usually one of a handful. This one's interesting in that this particular image doesn't seem to come up in other markets. So I don't think it was used as often.
Yeah, I didn't recognize this one before. It has the vibe of some of those Kenner cardback images of just the random Ewok standing there. It really speaks to that. That's really cool. So yeah, I had not seen this image before.
Yeah, it's pretty out there. It's pretty cool.
And then, you know, that I thought we could get into some of the kind of theatrical or, you know, studio promotional material. And there's quite a bit, and you sent me some great pictures, but you have like the regular kind of one sheet poster that has, I think this is probably used on like eventually like the VHS cover and things like that, that has the right. Caravan of Courage and Ewok Adventure. And it comes in, this is where I really start to get interested, is the international release and how really that's expressed in so many different posters, pamphlets, and you've sent me a few that are international. So that same one is on, is that a Japanese poster?
That's a Japanese poster. And yeah, in other markets, it was aired in the theaters. It came out as a theatrical release. Still not many collectibles, but what you do find are a lot of theatrical tie-ins. So you have ticket stubs and photos. You have posters in different languages, lobby cards, theater flyers, and some Chirashi type stuff out of Japan, like the smaller posters.
Yeah, and some of those, yeah, have the that first kind of classic image. And then others, I know this Drew Struzan one is just beautiful. And that shows up on a lot of different things that are like the European stuff. It feels like they use this image a lot.
Yeah, this is a German poster.
And that is that like a full-size poster or what's, do you know?
It is, and my version's folded. I don't know if it came rolled. It may or may not have. I'm not as up to snuff on all of the variants, but I collect them when I find new ones.
And then there's an image here that has just kind of a mix of different things from different countries. So there's a larger size Japanese poster with like the Gorax as the star, basically.
Yeah, little lobby poster from Japan. And then I think that button is from England.
With an Ewok Adventure, see Caravan of Courage, just got Wicket on the front.
Yeah. Brinda. The one up top is, I believe it's like a Scholastic poster that you could get back when you could, you know, in class, you know, sign up for things, books and such.
Is that, where is that from? What country?
U.S. Yeah, it's U.S., but it's kind of an odd, I think it's a mid to late 80s release, which is weird because it doesn't come out the same year as the show.
And then down in the middle, that's the Japanese program with like the kind of family, the family photo.
I believe that's a Shirashi, the little tiny posters. Yeah.
And then there's a handful of books that Random House put out as kind of just like the accompanying storybook. And I picked two here. One is in English, and then there's the German version. But that came out in other countries as well, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah. You could have a field day hunting down all of the different language versions if you really wanted to.
Yeah. I like the alternate title, The Ewoks and the Lost Children.
Yeah. That kind of fits the photo, I think. I mean, if you're just going based on the picture on the book. Yeah.
I don't know if you've read the English version, but is there any extra material story-wise in this book?
No, not really. I mean, have you listened to the read-along?
So I've heard bits of the second one. Did they do a read-along for the original as well?
Oh, yes, they did. Yeah. In fact, I was just looking through it, and some of the images in there are interesting because you don't see them elsewhere, just in that read-along. So it's pretty cool.
And then this one, this is an image you sent me, and I had no idea what this was. It's a Panasonic item from Japan, I'm presuming. What is this?
Yeah, so late 80s when George Lucas started doing tie-ins for Panasonic for advertising, this was part of that. So it was, I don't know if it was some reward or something for buying something, but you could get this, and I can't remember exactly the translation, but it was something about, hey, we're Wicket and Kanik from Ewoks from the Ewok movie. Everyone please love us. And so if you bought your Panasonic item, this was like a tie-in merch or something like that. But yeah, they came as a two-pack, and they're kind of hard to get plush-wise because, I mean, it's just, and we're talking like 1988. It's an odd year for it.
Yeah, that's right. So Kank does show up in that campaign, right? A few times, I feel.
Yes.
Like. Yeah.
Yeah, like fanning George Lucas with like a leaf or something.
I thought to round it out, I think you described this as the single food-related tie-in to Caravan of Courage, and it's from Australia. So could you describe what this is?
So Break is a type of fruit drink. Think of like any boxed fruit drink we have here, like High C. And there in Australia, they had a poster that you could get for the Ewok Adventure. And then on the back of each drink box would be a sticker that you could peel off and place on the poster. And once you collected all the stickers, it would make a full image from the movie, basically. The Gorax's face is obviously one of them. I think in the lower left, there's one for Sindel. So it's kind of an odd poster. I only know of one person with a completed poster. They're extremely, I don't think they come up very often, and a finished one, certainly not so much.
Yeah, it's funny when I look at this. For whatever reason, I think of like the South Park aesthetic. if this is all pieced together, that's like what I'm picturing in my mind, even though I know that's not right. But that's the first thing I think of when I see
it. Well, they definitely hired their own artist to do it. They're not using, they're kind of just like, well, here's some stock photos and, you know, come up with your own idea, really. I don't know that they saw the movie or had any clue what it was about. They just kind of drew it and had enough characters in there that they can make stickers from it. It kind of reminds me of the Presto Magics scenes where you could just pick different characters and rub them into a scene. It's one of those kind of posters.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, sometime I'd love to see what the full picture looks like, because this is awesome. So how do you view this movie today, big picture wise? I mean, I know we didn't really get into what you thought of it when you first watched it, but I guess you could say, what was your initial impression, and then how do you view it today?
I think by the time I finally got around to see it, I was too old to appreciate it like I should have if I saw it as a kid, if that makes sense. I mean, I love Ewoks, and yes, more is more as far as Endor goes, and that's just fun. But I don't know. I've had friends come over and watch it, and we'll do other stuff. We'll like craft or whatever, and we'll just let it play. And I don't think we give it our full attention. I did do that more recently, like it came out on Disney Plus, and that by far and away is like the best quality version that I have seen ever. Like those digital versions on Disney Plus are exceptional. This is my copy, by the way. It's actually from my neighborhood Hollywood Video as a kid. So when
that right there, that's a time capsule.
So when Hollywood Video said they were going out of business, I went to my neighborhood, my old neighborhood, and bought the one and only copy they had, because I probably rented this several times, and now I don't have to rent it ever again.
Well, thanks so much for this. It was great chatting, and we'll definitely do this again next year for Battle for Endor if you're up for it.
Yeah, I'll be around for that. I'll find more collectibles of note. Thanks for having me.
I'm always thinking of new dreams.
George Lucas.
I dream of visions which have yet to be seen. Which have not yet been
seen.
From dreams,
I create
a new
reality.
In this universe, new dreams and new friends.
This universe, new dreams and new friends. This universe, new dreams and new friends.
Panasonic, always new dreams, wonderful friends.
Panasonic, itsumo atarashii yume, subarashii nakama.
You know, I remember seeing the Caravan of Courage, or as it was back then on TV, it was called the Ewok Adventure movie. And the biggest thing I really remember about that was, number one, I absolutely loved it. It was one of my favorite things, but it was also the first thing I had ever recorded on a VCR. My grandmother had bought a VCR very recently, and so anytime we wanted to record something, we'd talk to my grandmother and say, hey, can you record this? And sure enough, she recorded the Ewok Adventure, and you know, just the idea of the VCR to begin with was fascinating to me and my other cousins. And I remember we watched that movie forwards and backwards because it was always fun to rewind it and go through it over and over again. But for the longest time, I had this little bootleg tape in with our videotapes that said Ewok Adventure on the outside, because that was one that we recorded. I enjoyed the movie. I could look back now and see how campy it is and that stuff, but I like Simdal, and my favorite part, of course, was, you know, Star Cruiser Crash, that whole thing with Wicket and Simdal. But I loved the movie. I absolutely adored it. I watched it over and over again as a kid, and just to give an idea, let's see, 1984, I was about 8 years old when I saw that. So yeah, I just look back at that with very fond memories, especially as being the first VHS recorded item that I had.
Fly across the heavens to the forest moon of Endor. To a world of wonder and magic, the ultimate in adventure. A new dimension in excitement. Lucasfilm's The Ewok Adventure at 8, 7 Central. Tomorrow!
Something that I truly love about Caravan of Courage is that while many were first exposed to it on the small screen, it was also seen on the big screen by a lucky few in brief stints around the world. I'm so thankful that a couple of European fans shared their cinematic memories. All right, off to Switzerland.
Hello, my name is Jean, and I would like to share with you my experience of Ewok Adventure on big screen. So I had the chance to experience this movie in the cinema in Geneva, Switzerland, where I was born. The film was shown at the legendary theater, the Manhattan, a huge classic cinema built in the 1950s, the same one where I saw my very first movie on big screen in 1982. It was Sleeping Beauty, the one by Disney. And 1 year later, it was the exact same place where I saw Return of the Jedi in December 1983. We are now in February 1985, the month and the year of the European release of the new film set in the Star Wars universe, which features those small furry creatures that had fascinated me a year earlier. I first heard about this movie from classmates who had brought a film magazine to school that showed some images from the movie, especially the two main characters, a boy and a little girl. We were convinced that the film would tell the story of Luke and Leia as children. Imagine my surprise when I discovered an original story on the big screen that took me back to Endor, although a moon a little bit different from what it looked like in Episode 6. But I loved it. The forest, the desert, the swamps, the creature, and especially the big villain one, the Gorax. Just as the French singer Dorothée sang in her song Les Petits Ewoks. And what a surprise it was to discover that this same Dorothée was the film's narrator. Later on, I was disappointed when I rewatched the film on VHS and realized that my favorite singer and host's voice had been replaced by a man's, as her contract only covered the cinema release. I would love to see and hear the original version again, which still echoes in my ears after all these years, after 40 years.
Hello everyone, my name is Yoann Rigobert. I am a French collector specializing in Star Wars products in France. I will tell you my memory regarding the film The Adventure of Ewoks at the cinema. I remember seeing on a Wednesday afternoon on February 6, 1985. It was my uncle who took me to see him. I was about 9 years old at the time, and my uncle proved me because he knew I was a very big fan of the saga and that I already collected everything related to Star Wars, and it was a nice surprise because at the time there was not much left on the saga, and the fact that this film was released in the cinema was a great event for me. I was very excited, and what a joy to find these little bits that I had already loved it so much in The Return of the Jedi. I went to see it in the cinema called the Olympia in Cannes, and which is not far from the Palais des Festivals with its emblematic works and its red carpet. When I arrived, I was able to discover this beautiful poster with Wicket and Logre. As I continued my way to enter the room, I looked behind the windows at the exploitation photos and the poster with the history of the film. When the film began, I had the immense surprise of hearing the voice of Dorothée. Is a very well-known presenter in France, and she released a disc for the soundtrack. This adventure film, with its magical and fantasy side, was really good for children at the time. Then, disc books were appeared to read and listen to relive the film at home. This movie was the first Star Wars my kids watched on DVD on TV, and they still watch it. As for me, my collection is expanding regarding this film with not much support for the cinema that made me dream so much when I was young. I am also very happy that Disney, after so many years, is bringing back characters or monsters such as Gorax, for example, in comics or cartoons. There you go. I hope you liked my anecdote about the release of the Ewoks Adventure at cinema in France. Thank you again for listening to me, and may the force be with you.
Très indépendants, mais si le méchant un beau jour les provoque, tous y feront bloc, les petits Ewoks. Ils vivent dans une forêt où tous les arbres sont sacrés.
Sunday.
I love the movie.
From the creators of the Star Wars saga.
It's terrific.
Exciting.
It's great.
The movie everyone's waiting to see.
I love the Ewoks.
You fall in love with the characters.
We really enjoyed it. Very good.
Lucasfilm's The Ewok Adventure.
Anyone who knows me well is likely aware just how fanatical I am with the music in any Star Wars movie. And that's a trait that goes back to the very beginning. So I was absolutely thrilled to be able to speak with Peter Bernstein, who scored both Caravan of Courage and Battle for Endor. Despite not being readily available over the years, the scores for both made an enduring impression on me as a child, and it was great to hear from the composer that brought them to life. Peter had been around film music from an early age, attending recording sessions for his father Elmer Bernstein's work, and later worked with him with orchestration on titles ranging from Animal House and Ghostbusters to Michael Jackson's Thriller. But that wasn't where his musical passions initially took him. He has some great stories from his time with George Lucas and the Ewoks, which I'm honored to share here.
Do you have any early movie-going experiences that stand out in your memory? With the line of work that your father was in as a composer, obviously, I imagine you had a lot of exposure.
Well, like everybody else in my generation, my first movie-going experience was Bambi. It was pretty much required. I had a lot of exposure. But that was exposure to the process, recording sessions and scoring notes and things like that. In terms of movie-going experience, I don't suppose mine was any different than anybody else's in my generation. Perhaps I saw West Side Story when other kids my age wouldn't have. But other than that, no, not really. I know there were a few films I remember seeing that, you know, I was told Dad worked on. Before I understood what that was, there was a Danny Kaye film, Mary Andrews, perhaps, that he worked on uncredited when he was blacklisted. And I do remember seeing that, but I can't say that it made an impression at the time.
Did you have any particular movie theaters that you remembered going to often that were favorites?
Well, just the ones at the time. There was, in Los Angeles, the Carthay Circle Cinema doesn't exist anymore. But other than that, my local. And I remember going to the Cinerama Dome when that first opened. But other than that, no, we just went to the local theater.
So which path did you take in pursuing your own music career? Was scoring in film and television some kind of goal from the beginning? Or what other forms of music were inspiring to you?
Not even close. I started out as a bass guitar player in the rock and roll world. And I did that for, along with other things, you know, being in bands, producing records, arranging for other people for 20 years. So it wasn't until I was in my mid-20s when I started orchestrating for other composers. And the only reason I did that, in addition to the rock and roll work, was that I knew it existed and I was curious. I was lucky to be curious about music in general. And of course, growing up as I did, I knew there were other things out there, where perhaps some other people didn't.
Going back to the movie side of things, so what was your initial encounter with and first impressions of Star Wars? Do you have memories of seeing the originals?
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, who did you go with? Where did you see them?
Oh, sure. I went with my girlfriend, who was later my wife, and a friend I was in a band with, and his girlfriend, who was also a musician. And we got in line in Westwood at the AFCO Theater, I think it was. And we're waiting in line, and he and I snuck around the corner to smoke a joint, as one did in those days. And I distinctly remember being in the theater and you know, the big music. Well, okay, I'd heard a lot of big music in my life by that point. And then you have the little spaceship that flies by, and then the giant Star Cruiser flying overhead. And I remember looking at my friend, he and I looking at each other, or the girls were sitting between us looking at each other and just nodding, going, oh yeah, this is good.
Amazing. And did you go see the second and third with the same enthusiasm, or what are the three originals spoke to you the most?
Well, the first one, simply because you can only have that kind of experience the first time once. I probably wasn't high for the other ones, because that was a little later on. And so I watched those simply because it was, you know, the phenomenon that Star Wars was. And it was, you know, I was in my late 20s and perhaps very early 30s when, by the time the last one came out. And it was just what everybody did, at least once, maybe more.
Yeah. So really not long after that, how did the opportunity to score the Ewok Adventure come about?
Like almost everything in my life as a composer, my early life as a composer, it came about through my contacts and friends in my rock and roll life. A lot of people, I mean, it would be customary to think, oh, you know, my father pointed me in some direction or another for work, but that was not true in the beginning. In this particular case, people at Lucasfilm and I had mutual friends, pretty simple, mutual friends in the rock and roll world. And by that time, I'd been orchestrating for a long time. I'd written some of my own music, and I sent a demo like anybody else would. And they called me up for a meeting, and I guess the meeting went well enough, and I got that job. No one was more surprised than I was.
And did George Lucas or John Cordy give you much direction on the musical side of things? What was the creative process like on your end?
I can't say that John Cordy did, or I don't remember. Let me put it this way. In those days, if you were doing television, the director, by the time post-production came around, the director was pretty well out of the picture and perhaps sometimes struggling to be in the picture. Lucasfilm, of course, was very much organized around Film World, where the director was more in the picture. But on the other hand, you had George Lucas there, you know, running the show, and his band of fanatically loyal Lucasfilm people. So I did more with him than John Cordy, I think. In fact, as I recall, I looked at the film with him.
Yeah, that must have been quite an experience. You know, I feel like with those two films, and Caravan of Courage especially, it has this unique kind of fairy tale-like quality, especially compared to others in the Star Wars franchise. And your music really, really elevates that. And I'm just curious if there were any particular inspirations that influenced your approach to the compositions.
Yeah, there were a few. Yes, and it is very different. And everybody was very aware of that. This was not a try to make it look like Star Wars exercise. This was a different thing, much sweeter and a little more mystical. You know, where Star Wars had a galactic force, this was more under the influence of local magic, shall we say. My influences, well, I started with one simple guideline. There were two people that I knew I didn't want to sound like. One was my father and the other one was John Williams.
Sure.
For obvious reasons. So there was nothing for me doing that. So I started to look around for something that would make sense. And I landed on more, you know, where my father, you know, let's say my father was Americanized and John Williams was kind of somewhere between late Romantic and Impressionist and things like that. I ended up with the Russians.
Hmm. Okay.
And what they sound like. That was where I went. Not exclusively, of course, but there was to some of that music, you know, there was a very good fairy tale quality.
And in terms of the recording and production standpoint, I'm just curious if you have any memories of that process.
Well, it was recorded in Munich. Now, you know, many, many, many people record in Europe, but I was very early there. And they really weren't as comfortable with, you know, sight reading and the recording and all of that as they are now. So there was a bit of a struggle in that way. Not that they weren't all fantastic players, but it took a little bit of, maybe a little bit of extra work. I didn't conduct the first one. I conducted the second. But I do have this memory of going to Munich. This is on the first one from London. I went to London to finish up that score. And my orchestrator was in London. So we spent some time together. And then we had to get the music to Munich. So we all stuffed our suitcases. There was myself and I guess my wife was with me at that point, and the orchestrator and his assistant and whoever else was in the entourage. We all stuffed our suitcases with music and smuggled it in without saying we're here to work, because that would cause problems. And I remember being on this plane saying, well, what happens if we open our suitcases? What do we say? And somebody said, you say you're a musician and this is your music. But, you know, in those days, it's different now. But in those days, landing in Munich, you would have the experience of people patrolling the airport with machine guns.
Right, right.
Not like that now, because people, you just can't get into an airport so easily anymore. But it was very odd. It was the first time I'd seen that. I don't remember the last time my luggage was inspected with all the international travel I've done then. But in those days, it wasn't uncommon at all. They'd rip open your suitcase, and I guess now there's x-rays and God only knows what.
And was Battle for Endor also recorded in Munich, or was that recorded elsewhere?
Same place, different orchestra, same engineer. I conducted this time, which was both nerve-wracking and great.
And creatively, you felt, you'd set the precedent with the original. Did you have any different ideas going into the second one? I know it's a much darker film overall, but.
It is darker. I had some grand ideas about what I wanted to do, but in the event when I actually got down to it, I had to let go of some of those and just, you know, write the score. I originally, as I recall, I wanted to write very long cues, like, because it was basically wall-to-wall music. I would look at these things with George Lucas. You know, it's called spotting, where you look at the film and decide where the music's going to go. So I'm sitting with George, and the film starts, and he says, start here. And we watch it for 90 minutes or whatever it was, and he says, end here. That was kind of it.
That sounds like some very typical George Lucas feedback.
He was less than, he's George, he has his mannerisms, but I wouldn't read it as enthusiastic. I was at one shoot. There was one sequence that he was unhappy with and he wanted to reshoot. And that's where I saw somebody who really knows what they're doing at work. That was good.
Yeah, we touched on a few of them, but you know, if you have any other standout memories or anecdotes from the production of those two movies, or did you form any special or long-lasting relationships with other creators on the projects?
There were some people down there that I really admired that I got to meet. The Lucasfilm sound designer, Ben Burt, who had a little, literally a cave underneath. Well, they were just building the ranch when I was up there. So this was still at Sprockets in Marin County. So Ben Burt, who was wonderful and creative. The matte painters, a job that doesn't exist anymore, were amazing to watch. I met a lot of those people. Randy Tom, the sound mixer, who is still there. I'll tell you one story. We're mixing, and I don't know which one it was, so I can only put one name on this story, but whichever one it was, the director at this point was somewhat out of favor and was complaining about this and that during the mix. And there was some sound effect. And he says, I don't know what that is. That sounds like it's from Mars. And Randy turns around and says, well, this happens to take place on a planet that's very near Mars. but no, I can't say that I made any long lasting relationships. I knew people up there, oddly, that I wasn't aware of, but those relationships were already in place before they wound up at Lucasfilm.
So I'm just curious if you got to attend any special screenings once the films were done, or do you remember watching the TV broadcasts?
Yeah, maybe. I remember watching a TV broadcast. I mean, by that time I was on to, you know, two other projects, so, and probably busy. So I didn't really have the time to sit for 2 hours in front of my television, or the inclination, I might add, having seen the darn thing a lot. It was funny. It was a very transitional period in a lot of ways. They had two people from Lucasfilm there recording the show digitally at the same time it was being recorded traditionally analog. With there was a protocol called PCM in those days that would work. They did that, which was interesting, and I think I ended up using that. My original scoring tapes for the first movie were beta, so that'll tell you about what was going on then. And, you know, there were no, what was that, 84, like maybe about a year before everything turned into computers. You know, 2 years later, well, 3 years later, I was one of the first people to be doing scores out of my room, totally synth.
Wow. Yeah, that really is like that transitional cusp right there.
Yeah, I thought this would, you know, this is how it would be. I'd be doing music like this. And it turned out not to be the case at all.
So 40 years on, where does your work on these two films, what does it mean to you now as you look back in the broader context of your career?
It was extremely exciting to be able to do it. They were big, long, involved scores. And I can't say that I've ever done anything quite like that since. I wrote a lot of what we used to call action-adventure scores in the 80s. But by the time the 80s were over, I was pretty much a television composer. So I went in a different direction. And I ended up being more comfortable there, simply because you know, doing a show, you knew what you were doing for a year. And I was raising a family, and I wanted to be there. I was more comfortable in that environment. And plus, I really loved doing these things out of my room, just from a techno geek standpoint. And I was lucky in that regard because I had studied at school a little bit of electronic music, and I was comfortable with the idea. And at that point in the mid-80s to the early 90s, I had a lot of colleagues, most of them a little older than me, who couldn't make that transition, and people who just had to go on and do something else, either in music or something else entirely. So I was lucky in that regard. You know, from my experience doing this, I went into it not really knowing if I could do this the way I wanted to. I mean, seriously, I was a rock and roll guy until a few years earlier, and I knew how to orchestrate, and I knew how to write, kinda, or at least I wasn't sure how much. My education, such as it was cobbled together out of a year here and a year there and many years of private study, many, many years. So for me, this was a big question. And I don't think I've ever worked harder or more concentrated. And it was extremely gratifying to hear the music recorded the first time because I sketch it out. You know, this is the process. I sketch it out. I send it to an orchestrator. And you trust an orchestrator. There was no time to do it myself. I mean, I was an orchestrator, but there was just not enough time to do it all. So this is why you use an orchestrator. And you know, hearing it be recorded and hearing it sound so rich and full was a great kind of, wow, I did that experience. That was my favorite part of it, actually.
Yeah. Well, you know, I just want to say, yeah, it had been decades between really listening to these scores, and I watched the movie, the first one with, I have a 4-year-old now, and she was curious about it, and she's asked to watch it several times now. So doing that, it all came flooding back for me and brought a lot of joy. So I just want to say, you know, thanks so much for sharing your stories and for your time.
Well, I'm happy you found some entertainment in it, seriously.
Well, these movies, I know they're kind of odd when you look back at them today, but they meant a lot to me as a young person. So it's great that, you know, they're a little more accessible now than they used to be.
Oh, they're definitely in Star Wars universe. They're the crazy cousin you keep chained in the basement. But it is what it is. I don't regret it.
Thanks again, Peter. This has been wonderful. Really, really appreciate the time and speaking with you.
You're welcome.
This is your axe. You're gonna need it. You're gonna need your axe. I won't take it. No. No, please don't die. No. Goodbye. Thank you.
Well, it's time to head back to the hut, eat some squash, cuddle a ferret, and enjoy the simple pleasures of being together with family. Huge thanks to Jason, Dave, Mark, Amy, Ryan, Jean, Johan, and Peter for their part in celebrating the 40th anniversary love for the Ewok adventure. Be sure to check out the show notes for lots of great images and links on the website, StarWarsAtTheMovies.com. And join the tribe over at the project's Facebook group and follow along on Instagram, Twitter, and Blue Sky. You can find the social links on the website or by searching SW at the Movies. And if you haven't watched it in a while, curl up by your Christmas tree if it's still in your living room, pull up Caravan of Courage in its glorious high definition on Disney Plus, bask in the dulcet tones of Burl Ives, and enjoy. Thanks so much for listening, and yeehaw for now. So what does Wicket say again, Eleanor?
Shtakusha. Shtakusha. Great.
I got Ewok.